Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the NoCellaCast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever-so-slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, November 15th, 2015, and this is show number 549. Well, this week on Chit Chat Across the Pond, remember it's its own show now, and you need to go subscribe to it separately in your podcatcher of choice. We had David Sawyer, CEO and founder of TSO Life. TSO Life stands for The Stories of Life, and it's a web service designed to help people capture the stories of their lives through written stories, photos, videos, and audio recordings. This is a fascinating idea with a really interesting business model, and I really enjoyed the conversation with David. I'm guessing that, like me, there are people in your life who have passed on that you wish had recorded their stories for you. This site will give you the chance to do that for your friends and family. You can check out TSO Life at tsolife.com. Well, I've had a crazy busy podcast week. In addition to recording Chit Chat Across the Pond, I was on the SMR podcast with Rob Dunwood and Chris Ashley, which is always a good time. We talked iPad Pro and the Apple TV and a bunch of Windows nonsense too, but we had a great time. As usual, the only problem with being on the SMR podcast is I don't have one to listen to. But go check that out at the link in the show notes. I was also on the Daily Tech News Show with Tom Merritt and Lamar Wilson. All three of us have the new iPad Pro, so we compared notes on our first impressions. Finally, we recorded an episode of the Mac Roundtable with me, Victor Cahiao of TerraTech.Tech, and Adam Christensen of the MacCast. What do you think we talked about? The iPad Pro. Well, because of all those appearances, this will be a mostly iPad Pro-free podcast. All right, since I've got the live NoCellaCast audience listening right this minute, I wanted to give you a heads up that the live show will be on Monday next week instead of Sunday. Good friend of the show, Klaus Wolf from Germany, will be in LA, and Steve and I want to take some time off to go hiking with him and generally goof around, maybe do some photography. I will tweet that the show is going to be late, make sure you know, and I'll do everything I can to remind you, but if you have the NoCellaCast app, you can always look it up and see exactly when the next show is. If you subscribe to the Google Calendar, you can have it on your calendar for the live show. And that's always correct, too. In fact, the Google Calendar is what drives in the NoCellaCast app now. If you want to subscribe to the Google Calendar, go over to podfeet.com/live and scroll down. About halfway down, there's a link you can grab. I don't like change. When I finally decided to spin off Chit Chat Across the Pond in its own podcast, I told you about all the things I haven't changed in my life in decades. My friend Nancy likes to say, change is bad. But it turns out once you start changing things, it gets easier and more tempting to just keep changing things up. I had so much good positive reinforcement for changing the show and splitting off Chit Chat Across the Pond that I got encouraged to do more of it. It's almost like change causes more change. You'll see in this story that it was kind of a cascading effect that has really gotten me out of my comfort zone, but I gotta say, I'm really enjoying the ride. Since I was changing the podcast itself, it seemed like a good idea to change my recording software at the same time. Instead of GarageBand, I started using Amadeus Pro. You're going to hear a full review of Amadeus Pro a little later in the show. Instead of using iTunes to add the ID3 tags, I started using a tool called ID3 Editor. ID3 tags, by the way, are those little bits of information about the audio file, like my name, the fact that the show is clean, and the artwork, and the links to the show. Anyway, I chose ID3 Editor because it had a scriptable command line that would make Dorothy squeal with delight of how she could program against it. Levelator, the software that I use for making the audio levels consistent, actually broke in El Capitan, but I had just changed over to using a phonic leveler to level the audio and bring it up to loudness standards, so that was yet another change. Well, if the podcasts have changed, we've got new artwork, three new applications for the audio, maybe I should rethink how I write the blog posts. For a decade, I've been using Feeder from reinventedsoftware.com to create my giant blog posts of doom, trademark Donald Burr. But it wasn't really designed for this particular task. It's designed to create the podcast feed that delivers the audio files to you. Feeder is still essential to the podcast process, but it was time to torture another developer with my blogging needs. So I bought MarsEdit from red-sweater.com. MarsEdit is pretty cool, and I'm going to do another review of that later, but it's designed to write blog posts. Who knew? It's designed to be able to easily add images. I used to FTP them by hand and then link them, even though Feeder probably could have handled that. And it helps with easy categories and tagging. Remember when I said the first change caused a cascading effect of change? Well, you'd think changing my blogging software would have no effect on my web server hosting plan, but you'd be wrong. When I first ran Mars Edit, one of the things it does that's really cool is it pulls down all of your existing content from your website so that it's in sync with the entire website to your desktop, which was awesome. But think how much data is on podfeed.com after more than a decade of, say, 5,000 words a week in blogging posts. Downloading all of that content caused a ton of what's called remote procedure calls, which my web hosting company, Bluehost, thought was an attack. So they blacklisted my IP address from my own website. Now, I'm not actually blaming them. That's not really a bad thing. In fact, I'm very glad that they have protections in place against remote code execution, or not remote code execution, but remote attacks like that, right? I mean, that's a good thing. I called them up and they immediately let me back in. They said they could whitelist my IP address for 72 hours, but if it started happening again, I'd have to call them back. I got a hold of Daniel, the developer of Mars Edit, about this, and he suggested I have my host whitelist the user agent string for Mars Edit. Back to Bluehost I went, but they explained that because I was on a shared hosting plan, that wasn't possible because it would affect other domains. A while back, I upgraded from regular shared hosting, which is thousands of websites on one physical server, to pro shared hosting, which is only 400 sites on the same server. Well, anyway, so I'm talking to Bluehost, and my new little best friend, Cody, asked whether I'd considered a dedicated host. Well, I had considered it, but I knew that was about five times the price, so I had said no. But he suggested a VPS, or virtual private server. This is just like the virtual machines that we can create on our Macs and PCs. They host several virtual machine servers on a single box. When you create a VM, you know, locally on your own machine or in this VPS environment, you dedicate a specific number of processors and RAM to each virtual server, which means you're not sharing those resources with anyone else, even though you're on the same physical box. Cody checked the pricing and told me it was only about $5 a month more after some fees I'd have to pay up front. That sounded great to me. I'm going to fast forward through a whole bunch of it, but here's a couple of important bits of what happened next. Cody suggested we do the transfer to the VPS in the middle of the night, but evidently did not understand quite how this works. In the morning, I was greeted with a tweet from Nocilla Castaway Michael Price showing me a blue screen indicating that podfeed.com was unavailable. It turns out that even though I was paying for a static IP before the change, they had moved me to a different static IP on the virtual private server. Quick call to Bluehost, where they explained what happened, and I was able to jump over to my domain registrar, GoDaddy, and change what's called the A record, which is what connects the domain name to the IP address. I made that change, and in a while, it propagated across the globe. The scary part for me, though, was something else that Cody didn't know when he talked me into doing this. When we talked about the virtual private server, I absolutely positively asked him, are you still my system administrators for this server? Like, are you going to keep it patched, you know, like Apache? Is it going to be up to date because you're going to keep it up to date? And he said, sure. Well, he was wrong. I discovered after the server migration that Allison is now a Linux system administrator. Well, even though I have tamed that terminal and all, I am not a Linux admin. I considered dialing back to the old plan, but by the time I had done this, I had already fallen in love with how wicked fast podfeed.com had become. Seriously, whatever you're doing right now, go over, click around on the site, and you will be amazed how fast it is. I couldn't bear to give that up because as much as you guys may go to podfeed.com, I go there a lot. I'm always in and out of there waiting for that little blue bar to go across, having that thing be gone, and I click and I'm instantly everywhere I want to be. It's wonderful. So then I realized I know a Linux sysadmin who I would trust with my website, I would trust with my life. So over the next year, Bart says he's going to teach me to care for it by myself. We'll see how well that works out for him in the long run. I personally find this terrifying because I have many, many talents. I really do. And I'm not you know, shy about talking about those, but I am not careful. I am the kind of person who goes, yeah, I'm probably right. Bang, 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 bang. And, you know, me having root access to a server, that just sounds like a really bad idea. But Bart said he was willing to take on this challenge. Don't know why. All right, I almost forgot one other cool thing about the virtual private server, or VPS. They said I get a terabyte of bandwidth. And that means I could potentially host the podcast files on my own server, cutting out Libsyn. Now, Steve and I had quite a discussion with our little friend Cody, who didn't understand an awful lot of things. And he kept saying it was a terabyte. And I said, a terabyte per what? Per second? Per minute? Per hour? Per month? And he said, no, a terabyte. I said, no, bandwidth is a speed. It's got to have a time component in it. And he kept saying, no, no, it's just a terabyte. So I don't know whether he's right about that. But we also talked about whether I have enough storage to be able to do that. And he said, there's a 30 gigabyte cap. Well, he went in and he looked at my my storage and he said, oh, you're already using 42 gig. And the minute he said it, I knew exactly what had happened. I'm running some backup software that backs up my WordPress database, but it doesn't download the files to me. It keeps them on the server, and I sort of hadn't cleaned it out since 2013. So I went through the, I don't know, it was like 11 pages of backup files. I finally went over to my FTP client, and I cleaned them out, and I've got 4 gigabytes of storage there now. So I don't know whether I'm going to do that or not. I've been going back and forth on whether to do it. I'm probably going to leave it alone because I'm too lazy, but you know, change does seem to propagate change. So let's recap. We changed the podcast itself. We changed the audio recording software, changed the leveling software. We changed the ID3 tagging software, the blogging software, the web hosting plan, maybe changed the podcasting hosting location. All that's left now is I need to completely redo the website. I'm tired of it and it doesn't represent the way the show works anymore. So I got to go change all of that too. See what I meant at the beginning? Once I start to change, I simply can't stop. As you know, this is no longer a sponsored show. Because of that, there's a couple of different ways you can help keep the show alive, because you might have noticed that I've kind of been spending a lot of money on software, on some new web hosting options. The hardware part, that's my own hobby. You don't have to worry about that. But everything to make the show possible, it would help if you do one thing. Go over to podfee.com and bookmark it as your Amazon link. So on podfee.com, there's an Amazon logo in the upper left-hand corner. It is not JavaScript. It is not an ad. It is simply an image with a link over to Amazon. And if you click on that link and do your shopping from there, anything you buy, a very small percentage of that will go towards helping the show. It's the best way you can do it because it doesn't cost you a dime and the show gets some help. So that's really nice. If you'd rather do a one-shot, we do have a PayPal button that you can click on. If you go through ways to help the show, that's another way you can do it. So I do appreciate the people who, a bunch of people went out and did push the PayPal button. I actually like it better when you do the Amazon one because I don't feel as guilty when you do that. But anyway, go check it out. And if you would bookmark that, that would be swell. I promised this would be mostly an iPad Pro free show, but this isn't technically about the iPad Pro itself. I ordered the iPad Pro Smart Keyboard from Apple when I ordered my iPad, but the delivery date isn't until sometime in December. In the meantime, I'm walking around with a 13-inch, $1,000 piece of glass in my hands, and it's terrifying not having any kind of a case or cover on it. Well, I was chatting with Bart, and he said he's a big fan of the original iPad Smart cover. I do need a way to stand the iPad Pro up for watching videos and a way to comfortably hold it in my lap at an angle for typing until the keyboard cover comes back into stock, or comes into stock, I should say. Now, the Smart cover is $59, and that's a lot of money just to carry me over for 3 to 4 weeks, but who knows? Maybe I'll like it and want to keep it and never even, might return that keyboard cover. I don't know. We'll see. So I went to the Apple store today, what I frequently like to call the Apple showcase because they never have what I want. And I went there to get the Smart cover and I asked one of the specialists if they had it in stock. His answer was hilarious. He said they do have it in stock, but they can't put it on the shelves. And right away I'm thinking, oh man, now what's happening? But he went on to explain that the boxes are too big and they keep falling over. He took me over to the shelves and someone had actually put them back out that morning so I could see the problem. Here's the problem. The iPad Pro Smart Cover box is just a little bit over 1/4 inch thick, but it is 1 foot tall. So not only does the aspect ratio invite them to fall, but there's a second problem. This very thin box contains Smart Covers. So you got a bunch of them together, right? They're magnetic. So they're so thin, the magnetic iPad covers inside grab onto the next cover. That means they all stick together. Now, you'd think that might make them a one giant blob that would keep them from falling over, but when you grab one, it pulls the rest of them right off the shelf. I thought this was a really weird problem to have, and perhaps it would have been smarter to design the packaging to display them in landscape mode instead of portrait mode, because then they'd only be like 9 inches tall instead of 1 foot. In any case, after a good laugh with the specialist, I bought the iPad Pro cover in spite of the falling down display, and so far, I think I might end up liking it. I mentioned when I was talking about all the things I changed that I had adopted Amadeus Pro for doing my recordings. Recording a podcast isn't really similar to recording music, but for years I've been using GarageBand to do the podcast. For example, GarageBand defaults to having the metronome on, keeping tracks of beats per minute, and even having reverb on voice tracks. Many years ago, Will, a good friend of the show, created a little script for me that turned all that stuff off for me, and I was using that right up until I stopped using GarageBand a couple of weeks ago. In another irritating example, GarageBand introduced a thing called FlexTime Editing. It allows the audio editor to change the pitch of a vocalist's recording in case they were off key. I never wanted that, but I would accidentally trigger it during editing, and it would take forever to analyze the track, to apply the effect, and then wait for me to undo the effect. So it really wasn't the right tool for the job, but I used it for years. GarageBand 6.0.5 was my tool of choice for all this time, but it was deprecated a few years ago and replaced by GarageBand 10. It might even have only been a year ago. But GarageBand 10 is so complicated and filled with non-podcasting things that I've never been able to get it to work for me. I couldn't figure out how to use it at all. Much like the way I dropped the levelator in favor of Auphonic before the levelator stopped working, I decided it was time for me to make a change away from GarageBand before Apple stopped it from working in a future rev of the OS. I like to be in control of the timing rather than suddenly being surprised and caught where you've got to, you know, scramble to make a change. As I started on this quest to look for an audio recording application, I thought about what is important to me in that kind of an application. First of all, I need a multi-track editor so I can separately work on the intro-outro music, record my voice, and drop in tracks from interviews and user reviews. I want the ability to do music ducking. In GarageBand, if I clicked a little down arrow, it would know how to duck that music track under my voice, adjusting the volume for me automatically. My blind friends always laugh at me for the next one, but I need to see the waveform of the audio track if I'm going to do any editing. I need it. I'm sorry. I don't know how you guys do it without looking, but I need it. The ability to split a track to remove a piece is a really important piece, or maybe I need to insert something. If I'm going to insert, I need to be able to slide the split track over to the right. In fact, I often need to slide everything that's on the right, all of the tracks that are on the right, over by the same amount. I also need to be able to export in an uncompressed form, usually an AIFF, so that I can run other tools to improve the audio before it gets compressed to an MP3. Well, GarageBand 6 gave me all of these things, as well as some podcast tools that I didn't use, like tools to make an enhanced podcast where you can jump to bookmarks within a show and have different album artwork along there. It's not that I didn't think those little tools were swell, it was way too much work and I never did it for you. I remember ages ago playing around briefly with a tool called Amadeus Pro, so that I thought I'd take a fresh look at it to see if it met my needs. I discovered a detailed 88-page manual online, and I did the weirdest thing. Before buying it, I read the manual cover to cover. I got a little nervous when I saw the date on the manual, though. It said 2011, and I thought, oh man, I finally found this great tool, and it's 4 years out of date. I was even more nervous when I went over to the discussion forums at herrersoft.com and I saw the sticky post on top dated 2009. Turns out I dug into the forum and found the developer actively engaged in helping out his users. He's just never changed that top sticky post. The developer also offered a free trial. So armed with the manual, I was able to test thoroughly before committing. I applaud the developer for letting me try it out and then buy it in the Mac App Store or directly from him. The Amadeus Pro interface at its basic level is really easy to understand. It's got the traditional play, pause, rewind, fast forward, and record buttons. Right after that are four really easy to understand buttons to add a track, delete a track, split a stereo track, which I didn't have before, and I really like that. You could split it into two mono tracks, and split track. Having these buttons right up front is a huge upgrade from GarageBand for me. I often have a stereo recording from Chit Chat Across the Pond where I'd like to split it into two mono tracks to do something like remove a phone ringing on my side or some other problem in the audio. All right, when you start adding a lot of tracks, it really helps to be able to name them. Amadeus Pro has a field right on the track that says track name, inviting you to rename them. On iTunes, I could do that. On GarageBand, I could do that, but I always had to click twice and sometimes I'd triple click. I don't know, it was really hard. It's easier in Amadeus Pro. I also like to mute the music track while I'm laying down my own audio track, and Amadeus Pro has a checkbox that says play right on each track. Just toggle it on and off. You also get a volume slider for each track right in the same area. If you get a lot of tracks set up, you can easily collapse them with a disclosure triangle, which I find really, really useful. In GarageBand, sometimes I would get this giant stack of tracks if I have a lot of user input, for example, and I'd have to keep scrolling up and down amongst them. It was a real pain, so I really like the disclosure triangles. One disappointment in the interface is that, unlike GarageBand, the waveform is not visible until you finish a recording session. It is not uncommon at all for me to have clicked on the wrong track when I start recording, and I used to be able to tell right away that I'd messed it up. At first, I thought my only option was to hit undo and re-record onto the right track because the new audio would splat right over the original audio onto that track. But in later testing, I figured out that even if it has written over like that, you can cut that out and paste it onto the right track and the original audio underneath is restored. That was good news, and I thought I'd be able to get over not seeing the waveform or recording, but in this very recording you're hearing, I accidentally pasted over twice. And it can't recover from that I could figure out. And I saved in between because I save when I finish recording. So I'll explain a little later why that happened. Amadeus Pro works really well in editing out sections you don't want, much better than the way GarageBand did it. In GarageBand, if you selected a region of a clip and hit delete, it left this big gap where it cut the piece out, and you had to drag the clips back together and try to make them line up and touch exactly. With Amadeus Pro, the delete automatically pulls the clips together perfectly. If you're a fan of keystrokes, you will love Amadeus Pro. The ability to use keystrokes to control things is what makes this such a perfect audio editor for the blind. This is kind of funny, but of my 8 friends who use Amadeus Pro, 6 of them are blind, 1 is low vision, and only 1, Bart himself, is fully sighted. They do all have one thing in common, though. They've been super helpful in getting me launched using Amadeus Pro. There are a couple of things I'm struggling with in getting used to Amadeus Pro. Let's say I'm doing the live NoSilicast show. I'm recording a whole bunch of clips in a track for my voice. I drop in a new track for, say, a dumb question. I've got tracks for the end music and the dumb question carny music. I'm all done when somebody in the live chat room points out that I said the date wrong at the very beginning. Make no mistake, this happens a lot. It's one of the great things that they provide to me. Personally, I'd prefer they tell me earlier, but sometimes it's a little bit late. I have not yet found a way to tell Amadeus Pro to grab everything to the right of my cursor and shove over to the right. I can shift tracks one by one by dragging, or I can define a specific place and time for them to land. I can say shift track to 30 minutes, but I can't drag it out and just say take everything and shift it, or everything and move it to 30 minutes out. I can only do them one at a time. Now, let's say I've already added the dumb question corner music, set it right exactly to the start of the question. I'm going to have to go back in and realign everything after I move it. And that bugs me. There's got to be a way to do that, but I've not yet figured it out. Another concept in Amadeus Pro, and this is what screwed me up today, is the playhead versus insertion point concept. In all the other editors I've used, they're one and the same thing. But in Amadeus Pro, it is critical to pay attention to their different purposes. The playhead is a blue triangle and a blue line designating where you want to play the audio back. So it's only about play. The insertion point is where you're going to start recording the next clip. If you don't pay attention, as you can tell, I often don't pay attention, you can end up recording in the entirely wrong place. The blue playhead and the red insertion triangle often show up and disappear on me, and I have yet to find a pattern in how to control them. I can sometimes beat them into submission, but I'm still very clumsy with it. The good news is that both Dan Eckmeyer and Garth Humphreys have helped me with this when they pointed out that you can use keystrokes to line up the playhead and the insertion point. That's good, but one keystroke, Command Y, moves the insertion point to the playhead, and Command Shift Y moves the playhead to the insertion point. I've not yet gotten the muscle memory on which one is which, but hopefully at some point I will tame this thing. Amadeus Pro supports some more advanced capabilities that I haven't yet mastered. I want to learn more about the paste over function, which allows you to paste one clip onto another, and it's supposed to cause the audio to duck under the upper clip, which is something I said I wanted. I would like the audio for my music to duck under my voice, but I haven't figured out how to do that yet, and I think maybe that paste over thing has something to do with it, but so far I haven't figured out how to get it to work. I know it's going to be useful when I crack the code on how to use it, though. I had an absolute meltdown the first time I used Amadeus Pro to record the NoSilicast during the live show. Dan Akmeyer was in the live chat room, and I don't know what I would have done if he hadn't been there. I recorded the show with, I don't know, maybe three or four tracks. It was about 40 minutes long. When I asked it to export from Amadeus Pro to an uncompressed AIFF file at the very end, which I had tested before I adopted this software, Amadeus Pro said, nope, file's too big. It's like, what do you mean the file's too big? GarageBand had never told me this, and that show was like an hour and a half and sometimes 2 hours long with a half a dozen tracks. Why would this file be too big? I didn't know why it was happening, and I had no way forward to fix it. Dan suggested that I try bouncing down the tracks. I had no idea what that meant, but Dan had never lied to me before, so I chose bounce document to new file. Turns out it took all the tracks and it squashed them down into one, and then I was able to save it out as an AIFF file, and all was saved. Dan is my hero. My other hero, Garth, later explained to me why this was happening. He pointed out that when I export from GarageBand to AIFF, it has always said mixing down, and that's the same thing as bounce down in Amadeus Pro. He went on to explain that it's caused by a limitation in the max file size of an AIFF, which is 2 gigabytes. I sure was glad that both Dan and Garth were there to help me, A, solve the immediate tactical problem, and B, to understand why it was happening. Without these two guys, I definitely would not have stuck with Amadeus Pro. Garth is continuing to help me learn even more about Amadeus Pro, like how you can put metadata into a template file, and maybe I won't have to do so much work on my final production file with ID3 Editor like I talked about before. That'd be another change, wouldn't it, if I stopped using that? Anyway, Amadeus Pro has been a learning curve for me for sure, but I have to say it's much faster than GarageBand at creating the AIFF file at the end, and I'm getting mostly the hang of recording and editing. I'm getting better at fixing it when I mess it up anyway. And if I can just figure out how to slide a bunch of tracks and clips over at one time, I'll be golden. Amadeus Pro is $60 directly from the developer at herrorsoft.com, or you can get it in the Mac App Store. Before we go, I wanted to tell you a great Clarify story. Nope, they're not back as an advertiser, but I promised I would from time to time continue to tell you my favorite stories. In December of 2013, 2 years ago, I created a tutorial over on podfeed.com that I entitled How to Create Return Address Labels from OS X Contacts. It sounds like that would be an easy thing to do, but it turns out it has a bunch of little tricks in it that make it harder for you. When I cracked the code on how to do it for myself, I whipped open Clarify, I took screenshots of the entire process, dropped in some arrows and other annotations, and I made a beautiful tutorial with a push of a button at the end. I'm really glad I did it because A, it means I don't have to remember how to figure it out again this year. But B, even better, I got an email this week from Mitzi entitled Fabulous, in which she said, I just learned from you how to make labels. It was such a great format showing the mistakes that we're likely to make. It worked just perfectly for me. I'm a new fan and I'll tell my friends. How great is that? I loved it. Well, that's going to wind us up for this week. Do not forget to send in your dumb questions, comments, and suggestions by emailing me at allison@podfeed.com. Don't forget to sign up for a subscription to Chit Chat Across the Pond in your favorite podcatcher. You can follow me on Twitter at Podfeet. And check out the NoSillaCast Google Plus community. We had a bunch of conversation there today. Man, I'm getting help. I've got a sick Mac that I'm trying to get diagnosed. I got a whole bunch of people helping me. George from Tulsa just posted a great price on Photoshop Elements if you're interested in getting it. So you really got to go ahead and check that out. That is at podfeet.com/Google+. And if you want to join in the fun of the live show, head on over to podfeet.com/live on Sunday nights at 5 p.m. Pacific time and join the friendly and enthusiastic NoSilla Castaways. Thanks for listening and stay subscribed.